I sure hope you're hungry.
Ooh, I'm starving.
Wash those hands, pull up a chair, and secure that feed bag. Because it's time to listen to Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss attempt to use human language to converse with and pick the brains of other developers. I thought there was going to be food. So buckle up and grab that O-shit handle, because this ride is going to get wild. This is the Syntax Supper Club.
Welcome to Syntax. This is the podcast with the tastiest web development treats on there. Today we have David East from Google on today, and he's here today to talk to us about Google's latest project, which is IDX. Index? How do you say it?
IDX.
IDX, which is their, like, I'm gonna put it just aptly here, and obviously there's more to it, but it's VS Code in the browser. You log in, you can start working on your projects in the browser, throw your laptop in the lake, go get a new laptop, you're up and running in a couple of minutes because you log in, right? Now, I'm very curious about this whole space of, like, thin client, remote coding, all that good stuff. So I'm excited to have him on today to talk about all that stuff. So welcome, David. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. And I do have to say, I would not throw the laptop in the lake because you still need the browser to connect out to it. But maybe if it's a waterproof laptop, you could. I've never seen one, though. I'm sure they exist.
So a slight aside is that the head unit, I put an aftermarket head unit in our van. And it's this huge thing. It runs Android, and then you can, like, get CarPlay and all that stuff on it. But there's a browser on it. And one day I was sitting in the car waiting for one of my kids to get finished with ballet. And I was like, I wonder what, like, I can do on this browser. So I fired it up, and I got the backup camera working as a webcam, which is wild to me that could work. So now I'm thinking, like, could I deploy the Syntax website when I'm flying down the highway on this thing? Probably.
Oh, no.
Because you can doesn't always mean you should.
Oh, man. Let's stop real quick and say this. Syntax is brought to you by Sentry. Check it out at sentry.io. So, David, tell us, who are you? What do you do?
Yeah, I'm David East. I work on Firebase. I don't know how much of a fan you all of side tangents here, but I've almost worked on Firebase for 10 years now. And wow. But they've kind of just, like, blurred by, you know, like, I haven't been, like, every year, like, wow, what another year. Just, like, I've had a great time. So, you know, time flies when you're having fun. But the other day, we had this big team offsite, and a new member of the team came up to me and was like, oh my gosh, I'm super happy to be working with you. You know, I've been following you on Twitter for all these years. And I was like, oh yeah, that's cool. And he goes, yeah, I used to watch all your videos when I was learning in high school. And I was like, did you just say high school? And I was like, clearly this is your first job out of school, yeah, right? And he's like, no.
That's wild to me that Firebase is even 10 years old, you know? Like, I still feel like WebSockets in real time is relatively new, but it's not at all.
Oh yeah, we had to, yeah, there in the early days with WebSockets, it was definitely, like, lots of fallback to long polling for especially older browsers and stuff like that. And that was before the days of evergreen browsers, where, like, which is funny, I was talking about this to someone the other day. I was like, if you say to, like, someone new to development, like, it's an evergreen browser, they might just be like, what's that? But, like, less than 10 years ago, we were all like, evergreen browsers, this is the future, it's amazing. And, like, so I'm like, wow, we have it made now.
Yeah, it's funny because, like new things that come to the browser, it's like, oh great, like, this finally landed in Firefox. Like, let's wait 6 months and, like, we could probably start using it. You know, it used to be years and years we had to wait for these things to die off.
And even after they arrived, you're supporting prefixes for ever and ever and ever. And yeah, you were just stuck in that hell for your entire life.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, it's a wonderful world of auto updating browsers. So do you want to talk a little bit about what exactly at a high level? I know Wes, with the whole throwing your laptop in the water thing.
That's pretty much all people need to know.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about what IDX is from your perspective in you know, something that the audience can latch onto?
Yeah, absolutely. So IDX is a new project, a bit of an experiment here at Google, where we're taking the open source code OSS, putting it into the browser, but we're putting on a ton of AI features from Google. And also what one of the things that I am most interested in, just on a personal note in the project, is lots of connections and like workflow improvements across a lot of Google products that I have been using a ton over the last, you know, how many years that I've been. I don't like saying the years anymore. Apparently, you know, it just makes me feel very old. There's been some time. And so effectively, yes, you can create new projects. And for me, like I've been working, helping out developers fix Firebase issues for a very long time. And one of the things that I always found to be really difficult was just dev setup. There have been so many times I gave a workshop once about web performance, and I was like, all right, now let's start up by git cloning this down. And then someone raised their hand and like, what's that? And then I was like, yeah. Oh, went to their computer and I was like, we can get this set up real quick. We could not. So I was like, oh, you can't do this real quick. Like, this is hard. And so I found that like getting, and then that's even like, that's to the beginner level of like, I'm just getting started, getting Git installed, getting Node installed. I've had bug bashes with, where we're testing out new features and products for Firebase, where I'm trying to get like a Node CLI set up for someone who's usually like a Go developer or something like that. So they don't let, you know, Node touch their machine. And so we're doing all that from scratch. And the amount of times they're like, I know what I'm going to do here. I'm going to write sudo. And you're like, no, don't. And it's just getting a workspace set up can be really, really difficult. And those are still fairly straightforward things. Once you're talking about like Flutter, which Flutter has a really great install process, but I want to use the Android emulator and the iOS simulator. Yeah. Okay, all right. And I want to deploy that out to the Google Play Store, or I want to have test versions out for apps for my users to have. There's a lot of gaps in between those things. And those are usually the tasks that like no one wants to spend their time doing. No one's like, hey, great time. I just set up emulators today. Nothing really happened, but I clicked a button, and then after 8 hours of debugging, I now have emulators. The app isn't built. Yeah. No. The app doesn't do anything. It's a white screen, but it can load in an emulator. So
yeah,
that's what we're doing with IDX. Really, we're making it so you open up a new IDX project. If you're using Flutter, you boot up this project. We will have iOS and Android emulator simulators where you make changes. You can see them happen. And then it doesn't matter what kind of machine you own. It doesn't matter what your setup is. It's just that process, that workflow is now shortened, and or even just like, it's just way less frustrating to get things set up. So those are the things that, you know, I'm super excited about.
I've taught so many workshops in the past. And like, I think back to probably 12 years ago, I was teaching one of my first ever workshops at a thing called Ladies Learning Code here in Toronto. And I remember, I've told the story before on the podcast, but it's so funny that I think about it at least once a month. Is we had all these, like probably like 80 women come into this room. They're all excited learning to code. This is back like Windows Vista days. And we're like, okay, we're going to learn WordPress. And we said, okay, you got to install WAMP and get it up and running. And people had corporate machines. And we're like an hour and 15 minutes into trying to get everybody LAMP Stack installed on their computer. And this one lady could not get it going. And she just says, F it, I'm going shopping, and slammed her laptop and walked out of there. And
I was
just like part of me is like, oh, like I wish she could have had a little bit of a taste of coding, but also like, I don't blame you, because like
sounds good.
That was rough. And to be able to like give somebody a link and say, all right, this is a tutorial. It's all dialed in for you. Don't fuss with all the setup. Let's actually focus on the stuff that actually matters and that is exciting.
Exactly.
And we can get up and running much quicker.
Yeah, I was even going to say, like, can you imagine trying to install Xcode at like 40 gigabytes or whatever that thing is on a Wi-Fi network from some meetup or conference? That sounds like the worst situation to be in. You're never going to finish it. So in my experience so far using IDX, it feels like a really like polished product.
We love to hear that.
You know, like the yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of the times, especially when things get just announced, you fire it up. There's templates, whatever. You have a couple of templates, right? But this was, I was I was surprised to see, pleasantly surprised to see, like a Svelte starter. And you can start up a nice little Svelte starter. And it, you know, all of the process of starting a new project, like things felt like products that I've used that have been around a while. Is there like a large team working on this or a couple of people? Like what's the workforce behind something like this that gets at this polish this quickly?
Well, it's awesome to hear stuff like that because I think when you work internally on it, you're kind of like, oh, you can only look at all the things that you need to do or the way you think things should be. Mm. So you kind of lose sight of like maybe anything that is going well. So we're always like, oh, this needs to change. We want this and that. Like you mentioning Svelte, we're like, oh, we need so many more than just that. So it's awesome to hear that. The team started out pretty small, to be honest with you. Probably like a handful of SWEs, like engineers, PM. And I don't know if anyone here is familiar with Roman Nurek. He is a really amazing developer designer working on the team. The whole team is amazing. It was one of the big reasons why I was like, oh, I want to spend time on here because I loved working with the team. One of the engineers, Ashwin, he's amazing. Prakar, like I could just name people. The engineering director, Erin, she's awesome. Like it's just one of those things where I kind of met with everyone and I was like, this is fun. I want to do more of this. And so I think that there's been a lot of focus on detail and like getting what is there. And I kind of know what you mean because when I first started using IDX myself, I was a little surprised about how well it worked, but I've been using it for way longer, on these real early internal builds. And I was a little shocked when I first used it. I was like ready to like click a button and watch things explode immediately because that's usually how first builds go. But I was surprised. I was like, I was using it a ton and I was like, I kind of like this. I loved the fact that I could just, I could install Homebrew on this thing and be like, I don't care if this mess, for the longest time I couldn't use Homebrew on my M1 machine. I was like, well, this isn't happening. Now I was like, hey, I get to use Homebrew again. And if I brick the install, I just delete the machine, which is something I really like. And so I was just kind of creating these workspaces over and over and over again. I do a ton of open source work for Firebase. So that was really what was kind of nice. If I totally screwed up something on a project, I would just delete the whole workspace and set it up again. Like, and I loved that. Yeah. Like, and I know it's not unique to IDX, but I do love that kind of, I love that future of development where you're like, I can't delete my machine, but I can delete this project. So that makes me happy.
Yeah, Scott and I are not Docker guys. You know, like people always say, oh, you don't know how to use Docker. I run like 4 Docker machines on a server in my basement. So I know how to use Docker, but on my personal dev machine, I don't want to do that, you know? Like, I just want to have Node. And, like, when I need to switch Node versions, it's kind of a pain.
Yes.
Sometimes stuff doesn't work. You know, JIP error and all that stuff. So it's kind of a pain. So it's nice that that can sort of go away. Maybe I should, like, just visualize it for people because you can't sign up just yet. We, obviously, Scott and I are special
VIPs.
And got an invite.
Yes.
Obviously, and you will be able to sign up for it at some point. But when you sign up, it's VS Code in the browser, right? Like you took VS Code, made it run in the browser, and then you also get, like that's the front end, or that's the editing experience. But then you also get like live, like kind of a browser in your browser.
Yeah, the preview panel.
And then you also get like a VM, like a backend. Like I could run, like you said, Homebrew or Node or Ruby or PHP on this, right?
Yes, it's fully, so the backing system is all with Google Cloud. There, Google Cloud has a system or a product called Cloud Workstations, enables this to be much easier for us. And so we are fully built on Cloud Workstations. And so when you boot up a new IDX project, you have a full VM connected out to. And this is a machine. This isn't like something where it's like, oh, there might be Node on it, or there might be this, or it only supports Node, or it only supports this. One of the things that I've been really getting into a lot lately is, so we don't use Docker, but we use a system called Nix, which I had never heard of Nix before. But it's been around for a really long time and has a really passionate community, which I've learned because when I talk about Nix now, people are like, what? You use Nix? They're like, finally. People are like very appreciative of it. But Nix has similarities to Docker, but is different. It's like an open source package manager, but that kind of comes off as sounding like NPM, but like with Nix, what is a package is very, you know, flexible and very powerful, I think. So like you can specify runtimes as packages. You can say like, I want Node, I want Python, I want Go. Or you can specify certain bundles of things where it's like, I want, like we have one for the Firebase CLI, but that also encompasses the Node and NPM dependencies as well. So you can get pretty encompassing with these. And then you just specify this in a Nix file and it sets it up. So if you create a blank project with IDX, you can go search Nix for all the packages they supply. And you could say like, oh, okay, I want to set up a Laravel project. All right. I like right now we don't have off the shelf support for PHP. We only have off the shelf support for web and Flutter. And that being like off the shelf means like you click a button for a web app that sets up Angular, Next.js or Svelte or a Flutter app. And then when that app boots up, we automatically start forwarding the ports to the preview panel. So you can see everything rendering right in there. If you do a blank project, none of that setup. We just sort of give you access to the machine to like sort of instruct it to your will. And then you do all of that with Nix, but you can still specify all the stuff for Laravel and PHP. You can even set up the preview window. So we tell you like, hey, use these ports. It'll listen for it on this port and it'll start rendering it in the screen. So all that's possible, even if we don't support whatever your favorite Go web server is or Flask or Django. It's just the machine and we have this little DSL complements of Nix to be able to just to set up whatever you want to do.
And like even like databases and stuff you could run on that as well. Like literally anything that'll run on a Linux box you can run. Mm. Bitcoin miner.
It's a Linux box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
There's a lot in this space happening right now. And I'm very curious if this will be the future of writing it. Very similar to how I don't run Microsoft Office on my computer. I use Google Docs and it does a lot of it in the cloud. I actually know a lot of the computation it does it in the browser as well. Like we see GitHub Codespaces, Replit, Gitpod, Code Sandbox, Stackblitz. Like everybody's trying to do this right now. And I was surprised to hear, like I'm like, oh yeah, for code, like you got a bug, you can replicate it on there and whatnot. But we were talking on Twitter and somebody told me Shopify, all Shopify devs work in the cloud. 85% of Slack users work in the cloud in remote dev environment, meaning that they don't have VS Code on their computer. They have VS Code on a URL that they visit and they go and do it. So like, this is not a toy. This like you can do full-blown dev on this thing?
Yeah. I mean, that's absolutely the vision and the goal with us is to not see it as just like something fun. Like it is fun and we like that. And so if you want to see it for fun, go ahead. But you know, like this is not fun. This is very serious. There will be no fun with IDX. No, but it is like it is something that, yeah, you can import your project in from GitHub and just you'll basically, if you're like on a very expensive computer, like you'll be like, oh, now I'm just using another computer somewhere else. But you know, it's always fun to get an expensive computer. But what I would say is that it's interesting to ask whether it's the future of programming or like of development environments and stuff like that. I don't really know. And I guess I'm not focused on that either. Like what I think is really interesting is obviously there's a need. And I think that's the most important aspect is like, because a lot of people I think are like, well, I really like a local development environment. And I'm like, yes, that's, you know, there are actually, I think, especially nowadays, there are a lot of great reasons to have a local development environment, or there's a lot of good stuff that's like, it's not broken, don't fix it. Very much believe in that. But there is a need like for having, there is a countless about of situations where you need to have this in cloud connected, just like you're talking about with your LAMP stack situation. If you're running a conference with IDX, you could have a whole like, hey, this is the Nix file that you need to have. And it comes, you know, I mean, you could have all that in a GitHub repo and you just tell everyone like, hey, import this GitHub repo into IDX and now we're ready to go. And then you just saved yourself a massive headache in like an hour and a half. And maybe a conference is a small, or a workshop is a small, you know, slice of the, you know, of the situation. But we can really extrapolate that out to way more things where it's so much easier to have a reproducible environment that I don't have to care what special situations are happening inside that machine across all of the different team members or people I'll be working with. Or even if I just want to get set up on an open source project and all I have to do is click a button to get started and I don't have to be like pinging the maintainers being like, so it gave me this error code and then it did this and then it did that. And it's like, oh, that's because on Windows or that's because on Mac or you're using a special Linux distribution. And those things to me are what's really great. And there's obviously a need for those things. And I think as technology only grows and grows and grows, those needs will also only grow and grow.
Yeah. Open source maintainers rejoice at people being able to produce reproductions, because that's always like the biggest pain, right? Somebody says, make us a reproduction. And it is lovely if somebody can post a link to a public, not only just a repository, but a fully working application, see the errors, see what's going on, be able to debug it that way. Since we were talking a little bit about the online coding space here, I wanted to ask, does this do offline at all? Is there an offline, like if you're on an airplane and your internet goes out, are you pooched?
Yeah, right now you're pooched. But that's, that's obviously not something that we want in the future. Right now, like the biggest thing is the cloud connectivity and like all the stuff. Like it's very cloud-based right now, but it's been a very, like we have a whole like feedback loop within our early user testers. And that has obviously been a very big request. And so it's one of those things that, we're still early. So the good news of that, the bad news of that is that, we have a lot of work to do. But the good news of that is that one of the reasons why we wanted to be early and reason why we call it like Project IDX and we tell people this is this experiment we're doing is because it's really hard to build a product, but especially a development product, because you're building a product that other people can use to build products. And so it becomes can be very complicated to figure out what to focus on. And you can get people in a room or you can think you have a lot of the right answers, but we kind of understood early on that we could waste a lot of time building features no one might find important or less important than other features. So we're releasing this out like with what we feel is very, very usable, but, still has a lot of work to go. And hearing things like, hey, we really want this to work offline. And that's, we can weigh that feedback against something else we might have heard, like, oh, we really wanted to integrate with this or that, or we want more specificate, like we want a better templating library. We want more this or that. And so we get to kind of hear that early and we get to make those decisions. And so when we build them and implement them, we know that like this is coming from a lot of users. So that's where we're at now.
Yeah. Offline. I mean, it feels like that's got to be a really challenging problem to solve. So,
well, yeah, I have a big, big background with offline with Firebase. Firebase has been doing offline for almost 10 years now, maybe 10 years now. We've been like intermittent offline for 10 years. And for probably about 8 years, we've been doing persistent offline. And yes, it is a very, very difficult problem, especially across tabs. That's like, if you just have it in one tab, it's only really difficult. But as soon as you open up in two tabs, it's like, a quantum mechanics.
Yeah, have fun.
And it being like VS Code or the project behind VS Code, I guess it's kind of the same thing with like Chrome being the browser. And then there's so many other browsers that are based on Chromium, right? Mm-hmm. What about like extensions for VS Code? Like I went on there right away and I was like, well, can I get my theme? Can I get all the extensions that I want? And I was able to find them and they run it in the OpenVSX registry, right? So it doesn't come directly from Microsoft.
No, everything runs in OpenVSX because it's all part of CodeOSS, which is the open source part of everything. And so everything is all in open source. And so I would say I'm not fully like educated on the differences, but as somebody who has spent a ton of time installing extensions on these things, everything that I've needed to find in OpenVSX has been available. And to the point where like, I actually wasn't even aware of that at first when I was using it. And I was like, oh, OpenVSX. Oh yeah, that's right. So it was one of those. So it's like, it's worked really well for me, but it's also one of those things too, where we want to hear from people like, I want this specific package and I couldn't find it or something, but it's available over here. So it's one of those things we haven't heard, at least I haven't heard anything quite yet about that, but I will be very, very interested if we did.
Yeah, somebody pinged me once and was like, hey, Wes, you got to get your theme on OpenVSX. And I was like, what the heck is this? And it looks like my theme, Cobalt 2, is 3 years out of date on there. So I got to figure out how to update it, right? Because I just published it to the VS Code store, and probably 3 years ago, somebody asked me to publish it to OpenVSX.
Interesting.
And I probably did that, but it obviously needs to be updated and synced somehow. But obviously, that's not your project. I just have to dig into it.
No, but it's a good problem for us to understand. Like, I was just thinking about ways I'm always like, okay, was there a way that we can, help people do publishing to both? Or it sounds like podcasts to me, where you're like, how do I get this thing published on, having started a new podcast myself? I remember just, they're showing me the constant reach. And then I'm like, I thought the day before I could publish my podcast that I could just like get it set up with everything. And then, watch it just laugh at me like, oh, you want to publish this podcast today? That's not.
Oh, yeah.
But like the prettier one is all up to date and whatnot. Like your major extensions that you use are obviously have something in place for this type of thing. And that's not to worry. I was actually surprised at how quickly I was able to just copy paste my entire settings file from VS Code into IDX. And like I felt right at home, which is that's what you need when you're trying to have somebody to switch. It's not like, all right, here is a new product and here are the things that are kind of different and kind of weird, and you have to relearn how to do X, Y, and Z. And I think the only weird thing was that closing the tab closes the browser.
Hotkeys and web apps is an unsolved problem. That's for sure.
Yeah, because if you overwrite system defaults, then people get mad about accessibility.
Right.
So I don't know what the answer is there.
Yeah, I
don't know either.
I don't either. It's one of those things where you're just, you can't overwrite system defaults. But in that context, like what's, mentally, what's a system default? Like, because I do that all the time. My fingers will, I don't know if they'll ever unlearn that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Command W, Command S, Command F. Those are the ones that always get you. What about multiplayer? Is that something that, like Google Docs, famous for being, like the first time I think a lot of people use that type of functionality. Is that something that exists or is on the team's radar for functionality?
Yeah. We already have project sharing in place. I think it's, our initial version. There's a lot of there's a lot that we want to do to improve it. The way it works is you create like a shareable link for it and then, an invitation out to someone. And then when they join, you're able to both access the project. The one thing that we always try to warn people is the way we have it in right now is that you're sharing your project. And so you're also sharing the machine. So if you are set up on GitHub, that person can push as you, or if like you're set up to like whatever deployment you want to send out to you, that person can deploy as you. So they have the permissions that machine has, like you're sharing the machine. So that's something that we've been looking kind of into is like, how do we fine grain the permissions model or make that, a little different. But there are cases where that works out really well, where I had to get someone who needed to publish a blog post to the Firebase blog, and they weren't set up with the account. The person who was supposed to add them to the GitHub repo was out and I couldn't do it. And so I literally just created an IDX project with Firebase blog in it, and I shared it with them. And I said, here's this link, write your blog post. Just push it as me, that's fine. Just, be responsible. And it was kind of nice, actually. So with trust, it's a really great system. But that's social trust.
Right, yeah. Yes.
And what about like speed and latency? Because maybe about a year and a half ago, I tried GitHub Codespaces. And they have like a freebie to cores where you sign in. Mm-hmm. And it felt laggy to me, like it didn't feel as snappy. And it was nice that it was in the browser and I got everything set up, but it still felt a little bit laggy to me.
I mean,
is that something that can be solved with a faster machine?
So we don't have machine like customization right now in terms of like how many cores or whatever's you get.
Yeah.
You know, everybody gets the same at the moment. It's something, you know, we're looking into down the line. But performance is like incredibly important for us. Like, especially like you write LS, you want it to feel like it's, you know, they're the files on your machine. I think that for most people, it's really, we've seen that it's been really fast. Like that's, you know, when we get reports of like moments of delight of like, this was awesome. That's like one of the top things we see is that people are like, oh, this felt really fast. However, at the same time, when we see moments of people being like, hey, I didn't like this, that can be a problem as well. And the main thing to figure out is that a problem due to network connection? Like, and then, you know, stuff like offline will probably help with that in the future. Or is that actually a problem with our, you know, performance? Like like I said, so it's so early. So these are things that we take very seriously. So I would love mm-hmm. to sit here and say like, oh, it's fast. It's so fast. We love it. But, you know, since it's so early, I definitely want, you know, like we want to collect more data on that, like understand for more. But for the use cases that we've seen, and especially like me, who I've been using this for a very long time now, usually with good connection, but not always. This room has terrible connection and I'm really bad at setting up mesh networks. So I made somehow my internet worse setting up the mesh networks. I have terrible connection in this room. I'm not a hardware person.
I find
person.
That where like sometimes in a mesh network, it like does not hand off to the nearest router. So I'll have like the worst signal and I'm like, oh, the router's right here. Just pick the one that's close, please.
I know. I still connect. Okay. Yeah. But anyways, I'm like, is this an episode about mesh networks? Because I could totally get down. No. But yeah, it's like performance is a big deal. Like, I think that's the most important thing for me to say is that that is one of our like product tenets, product disciplines, like achievements or goals. Like we want mm-hmm. this to feel very fast. And that's not going to be something where we're like, hey, this is fast enough. Let's move on. Like that's going to be an mm-hmm. forever iteration is like, make this feel fast, make this feel at home. Because you, like you said, I felt at home when I was there using this because it's stuff you're familiar with. But you're also familiar with things being fast with a local environment. Yeah. So that goes with that as well.
On the flip side, there actually is a world where this would be faster than your local dev. Because like, right. I'll give you an example. I go up to my cottage. I was working on the new Syntax website on the transcripts. What needs to happen is I download the episode. We do a bit of modification with FFmpeg on the machine. We upload that entire episode to the transcript. Then we download the transcript, and that was dog slow on my machine. Like it usually takes 10, 15 seconds on my fast thing, but it was taking like a minute or 2 minutes to do this whole process. And I thought, man, if I could run this sucker on something remote,
someone else's machine.
Guess who has fast internet? Google. You know, like if your server side stuff is being slow, then run it on literally a server that might be running next to where your MP3 is being stored.
So I've seen this at a much smaller scale where I was working on a library, Angular Fire, and I was on a train. And so the connection was super spotty. But what was interesting was I ran, and I had this same epiphany you did. I had never thought about this, but I ran npm install when I was on the train. And then I was like, oh, normally I would be like, no, like this is going to be so bad. And everyone's going to start looking around. Like you're like, sorry, I'm clogging the bandwidth. But I realized, I was like, wait, the only thing that's going over the network is my command to npm install, which goes to the machine, you know, in Cloudland. And that's got a way better infrastructure than my train connection right now does. And so all the app has to do is stream back the response that the machine's getting, which is far more lightweight. The npm install happened like quick. And I was like, oh, I'm at like dial-up speeds right now, but I just installed all this because I did.
Yeah.
The machine did. And that was like, it was awesome because I was like, this will take half the train ride. But it didn't. It just took a very normal amount of time.
Yeah, that does make sense. Yeah.
Like a Turbo Repo or NX. So one of the features of Turbo Repo NX is that you can share a cache of anything, like build files, processed MP3s, whatever, between people on your team so that you don't have to do that same work over again. And that's nice that you can share that, but imagine the cache was literally on the same machine as your coworkers. So that's cool. And like, and then I was tweeting about this, and of course you have the like LOL Chrome memory folks. So someone was like, no chance. I'm not going to let Chrome eat all my memory up like that. And I thought that was funny because it's like, worst case, it's exactly the same as VS Code running on your machine, mm-hmm. but probably not, because you're not running your backend process on your machine. You're running it on a remote server. So it's not taking memory doing that, right? And all the extension processing, all the VS Code background tasks, all of that is not happening on your machine. You're literally, you're just viewing a browser and doing whatever client side stuff VS Code does, which is the scrolling and the right. painting and all of that good stuff. So theoretically, it should be LOL less memory Chrome eating up.
Because then your local instance is going to be an Electron.
You're running a browser anyway.
Which is a browser. I mean, I guess I understand the sentiment, and I understand like the desire to make sure that things are optimized. And I think like there is an understandable fear that, you know, given the history we have with web apps, is that when you see a web app, you're getting like a watered down version of like what you would mm-hmm. get installed locally. And I think that's one of the things that we really like, that is really important to us as a product. Like, is like what our vision of IDX is that you, through using it and through like just us like working on it, that you don't see it that way. That like, hey, no, I can use this for whatever projects I want to. Not only is it the setup process is easier, but yes, it's not this big memory hog, or it doesn't do all these things. Or like, I see it as like, it's a grown up and it has a job and I'm happy for it. Like, that's sort of my, that's the goals that we want to hit.
Yeah. And like, given that this is like a project IDX, And it's funny enough, the first YouTube video I watched when I wanted to learn more about Project IDX, like the first comment on there is, how long until Google deprecates this? Do you have any like personal thoughts or feelings on the LOL Google graveyard thing for this type of project?
Without getting fired.
Yeah, without getting fired, obviously.
I mean, I've responded to a bunch of people on Twitter who've like expressed sentiments like this, and I can only speak to my career and my perspective. And so what I tell people is like, hey, I've been working on Firebase for almost 10 years now. And before it was at Google and after it was at Google. And the discrepancy of time there is about a year. So I've been, so this October I'll be at Google for 8 years working on Firebase 100% of the time. And so I just let people know, like, I've worked on one product here, I guess now two. I deeply care to work on things for a really long time. Like, my track record is doing that. I'm working with a lot of other people who've worked here for a long time, who've worked on things for a very long time. So that's like usually the best. Like, we had this back in the very early days of Firebase. We had this issue too, being an early startup. People were like, oh, don't build on Firebase, it's a startup. You know, like, who are they going to be around? Are they going to be around in 5 years from now or something like that? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the best thing you can really do is just do your work and try to, you know, and be around, you know, like, we used to always like, people would always say like, well, how do we let people know that Firebase is going to be here? And the answer is, be here. Like, you know, ship features, do things, get, you know, get people interested, do things that are, you know, worth people's attention and time. And so that's honestly what's most important to me, is just like, be here, do the work, you know, have fun. And, you know, it's worked out for me in the past.
And it's not like you can't run this stuff locally either, right? Like, you just said, the backend's based on Nix. You could NPM install, you could either fire up another VM somewhere else. You're still like, I always think about the rug pull when I'm picking tech, is like, if and when the rug is pulled out from under me, how quickly can I get this thing running on other infrastructure? And there's different buy-ins, right? Like, if you buy in to Firebase, you're going to have a hard time moving somewhere else. But that's the same with a lot of the Amazon stuff, is it's better because it's easier and the integration is amazing. But with almost all of this stuff, you should just be able to Git clone the repo and run it somewhere else, right?
I mean, yeah, right now, like the as far as portability goes, like you said, it's a Linux machine. It's running on CodeOSS. These are a lot of, like, we use Nix, which is a little bit different of a setup than probably most people would have, but you can install Nix locally. Like, there is a, like, just openness is also a very important aspect to us because it makes it easier working within the ecosystem rather than reinventing every single thing that has been invented before. And also, it it's really important, like you're saying, where you're like, I feel at home. Well, you feel at home when you're using the things you use. And so not only does it make it easier for us to iterate, and we're like, to me, the most exciting things about IDX are the fact that, like, they can be really small. So, like, today, the best example I have of this is that you spin up a Next.js app and you want to deploy it somewhere. Well, or an Angular app or whatever, you can do that all through the Firebase extension right now, just through buttons. Like, and that type of stuff is really cool. So not only can you deploy it out to production, but we have preview channels. So, like, you know, deploy branches and stuff like that. You can create those via UI. And so you don't have to even think, I mean, it sends commands to our CLI underneath the hood, but not only does it know how to deploy out the Next.js app or the Angular app, it knows that you have an Angular app. So it runs it runs the build command behind the scenes and then deploys it out. So it's not like, click that button to build it. Now click that button to set up the preview channel. Now click that button. It's just, no, click the button. And, you know, we'll give the preview channel a name. It's got to have a name, but then click the button. And so we, so that to me is what's really cool, is that you get to the point where I don't have to know what the CLI command is for that, or even I bet I have to have the CLI for that. And that's a pretty simple one. There's one of the things I'm really excited about that I like want to see a future of, like, just personally, is at Firebase we have a product called App Distribution. And so if you're building native apps like Android, iOS apps, you know, Flutter apps, you can upload the output binary to Firebase App Distribution. You have a list of users, and then they get a link where they can, you know, install your app as a test version. Since we have Android and iOS simulators, there's a world in which we can say, click this button, upload to App Distribution, and then now send it out to your testers. And then you didn't have to worry about builds. You didn't have to worry about that. And now the iteration of fixing something and getting a tester on it, or building a feature and getting a tester on it, is button clicks rather than reading documentation, understanding how this works, or, like, you know, setting up the plumbing yourself. Like, it's just, you know, that's where I'm excited about IDX, is buttons. Like, I want buttons to do stuff that I don't want to do it. And as I've been building stuff my whole life, and that's really what I am excited about. It's just, I don't know, saying it this way sounds kind of ridiculous, but I think at the same time, most developers understand. They're like, yeah, I want the easy button. I want the thing that just sends the thing to the thing, and I don't have to do the thing.
I'm almost saying the exact same sentence, as absurd as that sounds, all the time. I want the thing to do the thing for me, please. Yeah, no, thank you. Yeah. How do you feel about, personally, like, iPad coding and coding on devices? Do you think it's like the iPad will become the device, or do you think the devices will eventually all become merged into one? Or what are your thoughts there?
That's a really good question. I think I'm definitely not qualified to give a very precise answer. I remember when I was, like 10, 15 years ago, someone was like, yeah, desktops are, like, going away. And I was like, what? No way. I was like, David was wrong. You know, unless you're gaming, but, or editing lots of video. What I think is interesting is that it's the accessibility of getting started with coding is what I think is going to be the most impactful to start. And then you'll have people who will be like, oh, I can get an extra device and it's only going to cost me so much money because it's a tablet or it's a Chromebook or, you know, some, you know, cheaper device. But, like, with my son wants to learn how to code and he has a Chromebook. Well, there are tons of options, but, you know, as a proud father, I can spin him up with IDX and I can be like, look at this. Whereas before, if he was like, I want to learn how to code, you're like, I am not buying you a MacBook. Like, I see what you did to the phone I already bought you. That's destroyed.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, I'm not buying a MacBook. I'm not even buying myself another MacBook right now. Why don't I buy you one? And so for me, I think that's going to be the biggest thing, is that if you want to get started to programming, the investment now becomes, do you have a device that can access a browser? And that is very exciting across the industry, because you know, it shouldn't cost a ton of money. It shouldn't be this big, inaccessible, you know, resource intensive task to learn how to program. So to me, yeah, I see iPad coding, you know, Chromebook coding, all those type of device coding. I do. I see that being huge going into the future, especially when you go into schools and stuff like that. It would not be shocking to me, you know, just a couple of years from now being like, they are all coding in editors with like cloud connected machines, all like that's how they're learning in class is all through stuff like IDX. And yeah. That, to me, I'm very excited about that.
The phone testing stuff was pretty interesting to me as well, because like if you're building a mobile app with Flutter, or I assume if you're building a web app and you want to be able to test it on a phone, I thought, oh yeah, they're making an iframe that's the width of an iPhone. Like, good job. No. That's it. But it's legit phones running?
Yeah, it's legit. It's legit emulator and simulator. So it's not like you don't get like some sort of stream from like an actual hard device somewhere. However, in the spirit of exciting buttons, Firebase also has a service called Firebase Test Lab, which does do that. Yeah. So technically, we could even do that as well. Click a button to send to Test Lab, and then you'll get all the reports back from Test Lab about how it functioned on a real device.
Wow.
So, you know, we have buttons, or we can have buttons.
How do you do that for the iPhone emulator? Because doesn't that require Xcode?
So there we basically it all runs out on a remote server. I always feel like Charlie Day in that meme where he's trying to like...
Like, pointing to the...
I'm always like, okay, so there's a thing. And then that talks to that machine. But basically, yeah, like the Android one, we can do a lot faster because it doesn't require like an immediate rebuild. We actually are able to do hot reloading through Android. So you make an edit. It's, you know, snap your fingers, you know, cross our fingers that you snap your fingers and then it loads. With the iOS one though, like it requires a full build. And so we just do that on a machine up in the cloud land. And so you click a button and it queues it up. And that takes time because it takes time to run a build. That's something we've been looking into. Like, I'm not exactly sure the minutes or seconds or whatever on that right now. So I don't want to like say it because... that's not even totally available yet for using, though we very much want to get that out soon. But we want to get the performance on that better, but we also know that like we would rather get it out where you have to wait some time to see it versus just not be able to do it at all. And it's one of those tasks that I think is you're willing to wait on it a little bit if you're like, hey, I can get a test of this by clicking this button rather than do this whole setup, you know, where I still will have to wait for a bit.
Totally, yeah. And you're also getting your own AI-based stuff that will be integrated into it. Obviously, Canada always gets shafted on all the AI stuff.
We're working very hard on getting it into as many places as possible. That is also one of the biggest priorities.
Yeah, lawyers.
They have to add the use to all the words, the color, and all those. Yeah,
it's so difficult. 20%. You all call things so differently. What is it? What is a theatre?
So that uses Google's Bard then, and somebody's working on like a voice chat assistant.
Or uses Kodi. Kodi is like the code like serving model that all uses Palm underneath the hood. There is so many. Oh my gosh, learning about AI models and AI model serving is like you can find yourself in a way. You're like, so that one does. That one's the model. They're like, no, that one serves the model. And you're like, what does that one do? Like, there's lots of things to learn. As always. But basically, yeah, uses Kodi, which is Google's model serving for you know, coding style tasks. It uses Palm 2 under the hood, if I have this right. But basically the idea is that we have code completion and stuff that, you know, does its best to, you know, try to suggest what's next. The thing that I really like, because I like writing prompts, like I think prompts are super fun. So we have AI chat, where IDX AI chat, you can open that up. We also have something I think is super cool. We have this highly experimental option because we're trying to see fully how it functions, but you can... it has a really fancy name. It's called retrieval augmentation. So if you want to sound very cool at a party, you just say retrieval augmentation. But it's code-based indexing. So we basically index your code. And so that way when you ask questions, it knows about your code. So like an example of this was I was building this Angular app and I was trying to build a form and I got this error that was like, cannot bind this value to blah, 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 blah. And I was like, I don't know what this is. And so I just sent it to the IDXA chat and I go, why am I getting this error? And he goes, well, online, blah, 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 you are doing this and you need to import the forms module, which is in the app.module.ts, would give me a link to click on it. So just include this line right here and then to import it and then include it in your module declarations down here. And I was like, oh, and like I knew that once it reminded me, so I could have just gone in really quick. But like, had I been like new to Angular, that would have been like, oh, not only did it tell me what was going wrong, but it told me what file I had to go to a different file than I was in to fix it. And it told me where in that file it was. And so that to me is, you know, for things that I, you know, are these big known situations and stuff like that, I think that to me is just super awesome because even though I knew it once it told me, that's only because I've been working with Angular for also like 10 years. Had I not, I would have been like, okay, cool, IDX, thank you. Now moving on.
Yeah, that seems like where the AI is most helpful to me. I mean, I personally am constantly using it to help me anywhere, but contextually aware just completely changes the game. So that's awesome to hear. I haven't gotten to try out the AI features in IDX yet, but I'm pumped to do so. I think I'm going to try to get the syntax site up and running in it this afternoon just to goof around in there. Yeah.
Cool. Let's move into the next section, which is our supper club questions. These are a set of questions we ask everyone who comes on the show. This is actually kind of an interesting one. Is we usually ask what text editor you use, but obviously that's pretty simple. What computer, mouse, and keyboard do you use?
Oh, no. I'm going to be found out. I'm a simpleton. So I just use whatever I get stock. So I used to be a consultant. Before I worked at Firebase, I was a consultant. Yeah. And so they would basically be like, hello, consultant. We have this nice little closet for you to sit at. No, it wasn't that bad. But it was like, stick you in the corner over here. And, you know, like I didn't have the luxury of having an external monitor or anything like that or an external keyboard. So I got really used to like hotkeys and swiping around on my machine. And then when I started at Firebase, there was one of those things where there were like, you know, startup perks that were like, we'll give you like whatever setup you want within a certain amount of money. And then they're like, if you don't know, then just check this box. So I checked this box and it was like this big, like, you know, IMAX screen with the laptop and the stand and all this stuff. And then I went and sat down and I just kind of like moved it to the side and then put my computer down. And then like a week into the job, someone came up to me and they're like, what are you doing? They're like, don't you see all this stuff in front of you? And I'm like, it's a bit much. Like I tried at times, but I could never really get to it. So I'm basic. I use just whatever stock is handed
to
me.
That's cool. And is that a MacBook or do you...
On a MacBook, yeah.
Get like a Google-issued Chromebook?
I could probably... Now with IDX, I could certainly just probably use a Chromebook. I did, however, use a fully like this really fancy keyboard of my coworkers the other day. And I'm not going to lie. When I started typing again, I missed it. I was like, oh, the keys kind of go back up. When you type them, I was like, this feels good. I understand it now. I'd always look and be like, that's loud. I don't get it. And now I'm like, oh, I'm very close to turning into a keyboard nerd.
Yeah. Yeah. The only bummer with those is once you get used to it, then all of your videos start to click, 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 click. And yeah, I love it. What about theme and font within your text editor? So what kind of theme and font guy are you?
So I use OneDark Pro. And it's classic. It's good. I mean, use Cobalt. It's like the best theme out there. Did I say OneDark?
Cobalt 2.
Cobalt 2. Yeah.
Why is it Cobalt? There's already a Cobalt. Is that why it's Cobalt 2?
Yeah, there was a Cobalt in TextMate originally, and I forked it.
Okay, gotcha.
And made it Cobalt 2.
That's from TextMate.
And now,
yeah.
I don't think anybody uses Cobalt because
I was gonna say, couldn't you just swallow up the Cobalt namespace?
Yeah, it's funny because like I made a Cobalt 2, and then somebody made a Cobalt 3, and I got like I was like, come on! But like I literally did that to somebody else, you know.
Tasty.
The world's
medicine.
Ready for a Cobalt 4. Yeah.
Ooh, that does not feel as good as I thought. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think as my font, I used to switch them around a lot. Like I was using Dank Mono for a while. Big fan of that one. I use Dank Mono a lot in like sites. Still, it's really good. I used, I can't remember the name of it. Zeitgenmono was a cool one. Didn't do ligatures though, so I didn't love that. But stylistically, it was very cool. So I eventually just became too extravagant, bought an operator mono license. And so now I've been using that. And it just is, it's just like, it's really nice and you get used to it. And then when you don't have it, you kind of miss it. So yeah, mm-hmm. I use operator mono and, yeah, but I don't know. I'm a big font fan in general. Like I love fonts. So now that you've reminded me that I've been using this one for a really long time, I have a feeling that my brain won't let me rest until I find a new one to nerd out over.
Yeah. I use MassDriver. It's MDIO from Future Fonts.
Okay.
And it's gorgeous because everything Future Fonts puts out is gorgeous, but does ligatures in a more subtle way. I like my fancy ligatures, but it does them it's a little bit more subtle than operator.
Okay.
And you can use your own, fonts in IDX, right? Like you don't have, with Figma, you have to like upload your fonts if you want to be able to use them.
Yeah, you can use your own fonts. And also I'd be remiss if I didn't say this. My favorite feature of IDX, something I forget all the time that you can do with it, is that you can drag and drop files onto IDX. Yeah. And it just, because it's a machine, it just stores it. And now there's your file. And I forget that all the time. And so when I first started, I was storing everything in like cloud storage buckets and like trying to download it. And I said, coworkers like, what are you doing? just upload the file. And I'm like, I like things in hard mode.
Oh, that's great. So the last section we have here is sick picks and shameless plugs. I'm not sure if you came prepared with either of those.
I'm always ready to. I'm full of shameless plugs, so that is no problem. I already have like a bunch.
Love it.
But I have some sick picks, so like things that I think are awesome.
That's exactly right.
CSS. I think CSS, no, just kidding, but scroll snap animations, I think are very rad cool, as Adam Argyle, my buddy, would say. rad, man. It's very cool. Anything in CSS that you don't need JavaScript for is really great. And that's not to be like hating on JavaScript. It's just, you know, one less thing to have to talk to the other thing. Because it's when they say you don't need JavaScript for it, it was also what they really mean. You don't need JavaScript coordination between CSS and JavaScript, which is nice. So I love scroll snap animations. View transitions are amazing. Everyone, you know, the Astro demo broke the internet of the Spotify demo. That was awesome. Moving away from TypeScript. No, I'm just kidding. I'm definitely not going there. I love TypeScript. Yeah. Yeah, those are my sick picks. I keep wanting to say pick six because I'm American. As far as shameless plugs, I got a great one. So I started a podcast recently called the Bad at CSS podcast. And it's literally a podcast where we just talk about what we're bad at with CSS. We try to pick a topic. It's mostly a tangential, like we go off on big tangents. So like when we put the topic on there and I'm like, we tried to talk about view transitions, but we talked about something else. But yeah, we just talk about how we're really bad at things. And it's usually like, I was building this and then this kept happening. And so it's lots of Adam. So it's a podcast between myself and Adam Argyle. I always joke that I'm bad at CSS and I let Adam Argyle on the podcast because he's not bad at CSS. But he does so much that he like is able to tell all these amazing stories or all this like amazing tips of like this went wrong or this was bad. We've had a lot of great guests on that have also, it was surprising the amount of people when we said like, hey, if you want to come onto the Bad CSS podcast and talk about what you're bad at, you know, let us know. And a lot of people were like, oh, I'm so down. Like our first was Chris Coyer. And I was shocked to hear him be like, I'm bad at this. I'm bad at that. I don't think this is very good.
He's like, all tricks, yeah. That guy.
No, it's funny. In the podcast, which actually I have to publish this one today with him, he actually said, he goes, I think it's really funny that I'm the creator of CSS tricks because I've never created a trick ever. He's like, I just think I like to collect them.
Yeah.
Like, I admire trickery.
The collector of tricks.
So yeah.
Yeah.
Bad at CSS podcast. You should check it out because we're all bad at CSS, right?
We are.
Yeah, no kidding.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate all your insights into everything and hopefully everybody enjoyed this
one. Thanks for having me.
Peace.
Thanks. Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.